Welcome to Directly Speaking, a direct-to-consumer marketers podcast. Our podcast features marketing leaders in the direct-to-consumer and e-commerce space. We get to learn a bit about their brands and the stories behind them, compare notes on trends and challenges in the industry, learn how they approach their marketing journey, and hopefully a little bit about them personally. I'm your host, Marcus Lancaster, head of direct-to-consumer strategy at Quad, and I'm excited about today's guest, Jess Cervelon, founder of Open Late Collective. Jess is an experienced fractional CMO and CXO who specializes in elevating brands within the health, wellness, consumer packaged goods sectors. With over 15 years of experience, Jess has built a reputation for crafting and executing a comprehensive brand and customer experience strategies that resonate with target audiences. Prior to starting Open Late Collective, she most recently was a founding employee of Feastables by Mr. Beast, where she built the customer experience and community organization from the ground up. Passionate about building customer-centric cultures, Jess excels in refining every interaction along the customer journey to foster trust and loyalty. Her approach involves a unique blend of strategic marketing, in-depth industry knowledge, and a keen understanding of consumer behavior, enabling her to drive innovation and growth for the brands that she partners with. Jess is dedicated to transforming customer insights into actionable strategies that enhance the customer experience and contribute significantly to the bottom line. Her goal is to create lasting impressions that turn customers into brand advocates, elevating company trust, and fostering long-term loyalty. She is currently working with some of our favorite brands, Fat Milk, Taste Salud, Equip Foods, and others. And she's also the host of The Juice with Jess Cervelon, a podcast about all things building customer-centric e-commerce. Thanks for being here, Jess.
Thanks for having me on, Marcus.
I'm pumped to have you. We've got a lot to talk about as I don't know about you, but I got tired listening to that intro. You are a busy woman.
Booked and busy, my friend. Booked and busy.
I love it. All right. Well, since we've got so much to dive into, let's start with a few of the brands that you're working with. Tell us a little bit more about Fat Milk and what it's all about.
Yeah. So Fat Milk is really fun. Fat Milk is a Vietnamese coffee brand currently being sold online, but we actually just opened the brick and mortar flagship store in Chicago over the weekend as well. So we have a little bit of like retail component as well as e-com, very subscription heavy and very brand forward first.
What do you mean by that? Why don't you expand on brand, what you mean by being brand forward?
So, you know, besides being a quality product, like the beans are very quality, the coffee taste is very quality. It's also very brand marketing forward. So, you know, every ounce of the brand experience was thought about, down to the packaging, down to the website, down to any sort of interactions with customers. And so that's what I mean by brand forward. It was very brand experience forward with the customer experience at the forefront of it.
That's cool. So a customer experience is a, It's a ticket to entry for a brand to be successful, especially in the D2C space. You have to have a quality customer experience. I know that's something that's really important to you. Tell us how you go about setting that up with a brand like Fat Milk.
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of people, when you think of like customer experience, you think of it as like, oh, that's just your customer support, or maybe that's your community, right? But when you get like the portion of customer experience, when you get to the customer support side or just the community side, is more of the reactive side of it. So when you're thinking about customer experience from like the acquisition level to like time on your website, like what that user's journey is, what is the like feel of the package? Like what is my consumer going to feel like when they're even like consuming this product? That's all customer experience, right? Like this. So with Fat Milk specifically, it's all of those details are well thought out of, in the sense of, okay, we're going to acquire this customer, but we're acquiring this customer from, you know, marketing channels, whether that's social channels or email lists or SMS lists, whatever it is, right? But it's all an experience that you're walking through. You're not just saying like, hey, go buy my BOGO deal today. it's being a part of the brand, right? So that's the acquisition phase of it. And then when you come to the website, there, it's very content heavy, it's very motion heavy, and that's an entire experience through the website journey. It's not your traditional, it's not going to be your traditional website where, okay, great, I have the product and I have a static image and here's some people that are like utilizing it. It's a website where it's like you have motion and you can see the condensed milk entering your cup of black coffee, right? You get that feeling of like, oh wow, like if I consume this, this is a vibe, this is really cool. And then additionally, you know, you can learn more about the brand from like a brew guide, because Vietnamese coffee in particular, it's not just like, okay, I'm going to go brew it in my coffee maker, right? Like it comes with a fin that overlays on top of a cup. There's a whole brewing process with it. That's like what makes Vietnamese coffee so, so good, right? It's an experience, right? That's an overall experience. So again, going back to what I was saying about customer experience in the brand of fat milk is even down to consuming the product and feeling like getting a feel of what that product is from the website journey. You're going through an understanding of like what it's like to consume fat milk and have fat milk on your counter in your home, right? So you have a little bit of like the fans, the people who are like super, super happy about it, the ride or dies, like super stoked. But then you also have like a new acquisition of like a completely different customer. And so the ride or dies like know like what Vietnamese coffee is because they've like followed Lan's journey and like that founder journey, right? Like that's even a whole brand experience in itself. But then you also have like the acquisition of the newer customers who are like, what is this? Like, oh, I want to learn it. And it's really important for those newer customers to teach them like what Vietnamese coffee is, but also about Vietnamese culture as well. Right. And that founder story with them too, to bring them into the fold of like, here you're learning about these things, you know, purchase our product.
Yeah. That. Well, and it just builds the value of the brand because people understand it better and feel in a sense of ownership then.
Yeah, no, exactly. Exactly. And I mean, I know we'll get into this because I know we're going to also talk about like Feastables at some point and like even, you know, another brand that I work with. But I think that no matter, even if you're a creator brand or not, an influencer brand or not, I think that founder story and that origin story of like why you discovered your product or put out your product, right? And like why, like what you want your customer to feel when consuming your product, wearing your product, whatever it is so important in the brand marketing journey. Like we just don't want to put things out. Like think about this for anybody who's viewing this, think about this cup, right? Like this is a Brewmate, but why did I go Brewmate and not Stanley, right? I went Brewmate because I was more attached to the product journey over the hype of Stanley Cup. Like that's my point of like comparing those like two different products, but almost the same, is that there's an emotional connection to that brand. And that's such a core of like what brand marketing is. That's when I talk about customer experience and brand experience, that's what I'm talking about, is that creating that connection with that brand. So going back to my original point though, about founders, right? Founders, influencers, and like that story is so important as you're coming onto the market, because you want your customer to have some sort of feeling and want and need towards your product. So talking about your origin story, talking about the quality of your product, whatever it is that like brought you to bringing your product to the market, is so important in your customer's journey to get their buy-in.
I love that. The founder aspect of it, does having a strong founder and a strong founder story change the way you go about acquiring customers?
I think so, because some founders might not even want to talk about their story, right? Like, I think it's interesting because there's some founders out there that I've worked with who are like not really that involved. Like they just like put the product out there and they're more behind the product. And then there's some founders who are like, I'm the founder of this brand. This is my thing. This is why, right? Like there's two different pathways. And I don't think like there's any wrong or right answer to it. I think it's all contingent on, like, we're all humans, right? Like, a founder is going to be a human. So they might feel more comfortable putting their story out and some might not, right? Some might get more behind their product. But I think what the baseline is that if you're not a founder who's interested in sharing your story and you want to just share about your product, I think the storyline of your product is important. And you don't always have to put out the founder story to sell your product. Does that make sense?
Because the value, the nature, the intrinsic ethos around the brand is in and of itself enough to tell a story.
Right. I think that's so it, whether you're About Us is about an individual person like coming up with an idea and like putting it out into the market, or if your story is about my cup and my cup's the most quality and here's why, there's just two different stories. And I think they both have value, but you don't have to do one or the other.
Gotcha. Do you find that if you've got a really robust brand experience, especially in your e-com and D2C space, the two questions, I'm guessing the first one is a yes, but does it elongate your customer experience on the website? Are they staying on longer? And secondarily, does it reduce the number of touches that are required to acquire a new customer?
So this is just my personal philosophy. So let me just preface this. Okay. I think that when you think through the brand experience, it all depends. It all like honestly depends. Like if we compare like Fat Milk, for instance, right? Fat Milk is a coffee brand. So you want your customer to understand what this is, like, you know, go through a brand experience, but like, you're not going to wait on the website a long time because it's just one product, right? But then if I look at like a Feastables example, right, where there's like a huge founder story to this, like you're going to wait on that website. You're going to like, you're going to be looking for little Easter eggs. And we'll get into Feastables. But my point is that I think that, you know, you don't have to think about brand experience on the site, like the user journey is this like super robust thing all the time. Like, but to answer your second portion of your question, right? From a customer experience perspective, what you should be answering is the questions before they become questions. And so what I mean by that is like Vietnamese coffee, for instance, right? What is it? How do I brew it? What's the feel that I'm going to get from it? Those are the three things I'm answering, right? But if I'm looking at Feastables, what is it? How do I consume it? What are my feels? And tell me a story about Jimmy. Mr. Beast, right? Like that's obvious, but like those are answering questions before they become questions for that particular product.
I understand. All right. Well, let's transition. You've mentioned Feastables a couple times. What a fantastic brand. And obviously robust influencer support, if you will, from Mr. Beast. Tell us about your journey with Feastables.
Yeah. So with Feastables, I mean, to be honest with you, I kind of got lucky because Feastables was my first D2C company I've ever worked for.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't even know if you knew that, like if I had told you that yet. So previously I actually worked in B2B and like I've been in customer experience. I've been in product marketing. I've done like customer success. I've done like the varieties of like different like customer centricity pieces, but mostly in B2B and like just software specifically, right? And then honestly, it was kind of a luck of a draw that like I lived in Chicago. I moved to Chicago. I met the previous CEO of Feastables who came from RX Bar. So I met like the RX Bar crew and Feastables wasn't even on the market. I remember somebody being like, hey, do you want to come work here? And I was like, what is Feastables? Who is Mr. Beast? What? But I was like, but I have always wanted to work in D2C and I never, and nobody would ever give me a chance because I had like this B2B background, right?
Background.
Like, and like nobody would give me a chance. And it's really interesting that like sweet Jim Murray gave me a chance to work in D2C at Feastables. And I literally was employee 4 of Feastables and started the customer experience department from the ground up. So, and I mean, we touched everything. It wasn't just support. Like we were doing like website journey stuff. We were doing community building. Like I was even touching like some CRM in there. Like there was like marketing pieces in there. You know, there was a lot of different components because when you're that much of a startup and you have this huge audience base, it's like all hands on deck. Like that was like, honestly, starting at Feasibles was probably like the most psychotic startup story that I have. And I love it. I love it so much.
There's probably some really cool stories in there. Let's start with, what's a couple things that you did really well that you might maybe even didn't know you were doing well at the time that now you've taken with you and you're going to do wherever else you go?
Yeah. So, man, I think that's actually a pretty hard question. Well, I will say it's answering the questions before they become questions, right? So it's
love
like
that.
So yes, like very much of like that B2B software mentality of like automating and deflecting, giving the answers before, but like taking that theory into e-commerce really helped us because you got to think about it. Like we're this product that came on the market, right? It's a chocolate bar. And these parents are probably like, why does my kid want this chocolate bar? Like who cares about a chocolate bar? And why do I want to buy it from an e-commerce store?
Right.
Right. And so you got to answer those questions before they become questions is my point. Right. So like, so from a product information perspective, as well as like answering the questions of what Feastables is, but also we didn't know how much traffic we were going to have. So I literally took that B2B theory of like deflecting and answering the questions before, put in chatbots, all this stuff. Right. And as soon as we turned on the lights, from that first day that we went on, I was able to get such a massive amount of like deflection of tickets that I kept my team small that they could deliver the human experience and be able to like actually answer people, right? So long-winded, answering questions before they became questions was something that I think we did really well. I don't want to just own the only credit for that. There was a
whole team.
My CX team, like, they're their own baddies. Okay. You know,
that's a great takeaway though. I love that message, answering questions before their questions, because as you were talking about that, I won't name them, but a few recent e-commerce sites that I was on, I was there as a consumer and struggled because I did not that was not part of the experience. So I love that. That's a great lesson.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that theory can be applied anywhere. And like in you, honestly, it's not even just a website journey. If I have a new product that's coming out and like you're saying, like, and I'm emailing my list, right? Your creative in that email should answer questions before it becomes questions. Like, it's not just about like, oh, let me go do an FAQ and say like, here's the questions and the answer. It's also just like bringing somebody on a journey to understand what it is that you're selling. You know,
love it. All right. Yeah. I'm going to flip the same question back at you in a different way.
What's
a couple things that you did when you started the whole Feastables, you know, early on in the Feastables journey that did not execute well and you learned from it?
Yeah. Man, this is like very customer support centric, actually community centric, like tool based. But I had the wrong tech stack. Like, honestly, okay. I had the wrong tech stack. I mean, there's like other things too, and we'll get to the second one. I have to think about it a little bit. Not that you fail with fire. Okay. Yeah. Like you pivot and you do things, but I think that like definitely had the wrong tech stack. And I think the valuable lesson in this for a lot of D2C companies is like, there's like tech stack that's out there. That's like, this is the best for you. You should have this. Everybody says this is so good. Right. But it's not all, that doesn't always apply to you. Like you need to do your due diligence. And so like one of the things that we had was actually our help desk. It was like a really terrible agent experience. It was a terrible agent experience. It was a terrible internal experience to like get any sort of analytics. And I kind of trusted that like everybody in DC uses these tools. And I'm like, that doesn't work for me because it's not just a support perspective. When you have a brand that is so focused on community, so very like involved in socials and all of these places, right? You really need to have really strong listening and analytics for your social channels specifically. But that's from like a reactive standpoint. How are you thinking about these channels proactively, right?
I understand.
And then this is
relevant to the brand too.
Relevant to the brand. And this actually goes into the second part of your question. So I don't think we had a good grasp of like our listening of what was happening in customer feedback across all social channels. There was things that were just like, kind of slipped through the cracks. Like, you know, we could be in all these channels and be where all of our customers were, but how are you actually getting the analytics and reporting and like outside of just your Twitter, right? Or outside of just your Instagram? Like, so I don't want to say it was like a failure necessarily. I think it was just a really big learning for us. If you're social heavy, like you really, the same way you think about your customer support, you should be thinking about your community in that way too.
I love that. So how do you today, like with a Fat Milk or a Taste Salute or any of the other brands you're working with, monitor non-owned social channels?
Yeah. So, I mean, not every tool can like, or tool, sorry, not every company can afford the listening tools. Like, I'll be honest with you, they can get really costly. Like, to be honest with you, I don't think I have a full, like, clean answer. I think more of my answer is just being more aware of it and seeing what works with your team is my suggestion to somebody else. Like your social media manager or your community manager isn't just there to be engaging in just your own channels. They should be going out and looking into the community of like, so like Fat Milk, for instance, right? Like the person that runs our social, she's like going out into like other threads and commenting on things and seeing what other people are saying about Vietnamese coffee or if there's anything negative out there. Like, and she's like, she's proactively like getting out there and seeking the information and not just waiting for it to come to her.
Very cool. All right. Well, we don't have enough time, Jess, because I love talking to you. This is great. Let's talk quickly about Taste Salute. Tell us about that brand.
So Taste Salute is a hydration company. And all of their flavors, they're really interesting because all of their flavors are based off of agua frescas. So there's like your traditional flavors like Jamaica or horchata or like, but then also coming out with like new flavors, but they're also really cool because they're very content heavy. There's two founders, there's Tyler and Josh is actually, he has a podcast called La Plática. Like he's kind of got this whole like influencer background. So it's really interesting because there's like a whole acquisition level from that. But then there's also organic like marketing and social and content building and in real life brand experience, things that like get like build, help them build awareness and get out in the market and like in different audiences. So again, another long-winded one, but they excite me. They like, I think they do some really cool stuff. And for any of the listeners, like go to their website. It's a brand new website that Sharma Brands actually helped them develop. So
awesome. With that brand and with Fat Milk, probably a little bit more effort on acquisition than perhaps maybe with Feastables, just because of the brand recognition and reach of the social.
I think, you know, honestly, I think that's a yes, but no.
Okay.
Cause a lot of people always assume that with like Feastables that like, okay, that's like, you have such a large acquisition, but like retention is another piece of it. And I get it. Like, I know that's like on the whole other end of it, but you know, let's just go back to the Feastables example, right? Like, because it's something like I'm really passionate about is that there was still, you still had to do your email marketing. You still had to do your list growing. You still, like one of the biggest channels that we found a lot of success was with Feastables was actually SMS marketing. Yes, it was like social, but outside of social, right? Like Jimmy, Mr. Beast is like a social influencer, yes. Right? So how do you acquire your customer from a different capacity in like other channels? So yes, there's a piece of like switching a social user into your list, but then also once we entered Walmart, like how do you acquire that customer and bring that customer back into the funnel that if they're just organically finding you, you know, on the shelves. One of the biggest activations that we did at Feastables was actually, I wouldn't say biggest, but like, I think a little bit unique of bridging that gap was when we launched into Walmart, we did a giveaway where it was like, text this keyword to 69420, which was our SMS short code, and be entered into a giveaway. And we did like a whole receipt validation. And that's like, that's how you organically bring people.
Got it. Love that.
Like, into the funnel, right? And like, and I get it, like, and to go back to your question, for sure, like acquisition with Feastables was like very massive too, but the same thing can be applied to Fat Milk and Taste Salute and Equip and like all these other brands that I'm like working with. You still have to go through the list build. You still have to do the very traditional things in marketing to build your list. Just because you might get somebody in doesn't mean they're actually going to stay. You know?
Makes perfect sense. And you're absolutely right. There is never in the entire history of marketing been a more important time to be building your first party and zero party data sets.
Yep.
What are some things that energize you, you know, get you up in the morning and keep you going?
Well, what got me up this morning was thinking I forgot to do something for a client. So I've been up since 4 a.m.
Oh, my God.
I don't know about energizing. I would say putting the fear of God in you. but what gets me up, like honestly, what like really energizes me in this realm, and like not just e-com, even going back to B2B, and just like is the art and science behind consumer behavior. I love deciphering it. I love nerding out about it. But specifically, I also really love helping brands understand it and what works for their audience. So, I mean, that's honestly why I started my own fractional agency, because it's like, I want to help other brands do this stuff too, right? Like I want to help other brands, like not just deliver these like dope customer experiences, but really change how they think about it internally and within their business culture.
You're the first fractional CMO that I've had on the podcast. Do you find it difficult to put different brand hats on during the course of any given day?
I think it's a lot of channel switching in my brain, but I'm also a psychopath. So there's probably that. Yes, but no. And I don't know if it's like an individualistic thing or what, but I like am such a nerd about like that consumer behavior and journeys that like, I like the channel switching. So for me, I don't find it really hard. Like, I don't feel like I'm getting like anything mixed up. Like, when you're working with me, like I'm getting engulfed in your brand. Like, I want to know about your customer personas. I want to know about what your goals are, what your needs are. I also like do a whole analytics piece, like before I even start working with you. So I'm like, understand like what's happening. The point of that though, is because I want to understand your customer and I want to understand like how to like change the game for you both externally and internally.
Well, I'm a little hyper and I think you and I have some similar personality characteristics, but I'll say that, you know, it's gotta be fun to not only be helping different emerging brands grow, but also to be able to put on a different hat, you know, every day. Today I'm a brand marketer today, you know, now I'm an acquisition marketer. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, and for sure. And like, I think that's really, I think that's exactly what it is, because not every brand I'm doing the same thing. Like for Fat Milk, I am the fractional CMO. So I'm thinking about marketing. I'm thinking about like the entirety of your customer journey. But for a brand like Taste Salute, I'm the fractional VP of CX for them, right? So like I'm really helping like just specifically the customer experience, like so like the support of the community. I'm like helping inject like that, like thinking about those customer journeys. But my point is though, is like you might think that they're all the same, but they're not, because I'm doing different types of projects constantly. There's other people I literally just do email marketing for, like just doing their CRM, you know? So it's like, there's different pieces of the journey that I'm putting together for multiple people throughout the day.
All right. Well, we've talked a lot because you got a lot going on professionally, but in that, when you're not working, what gets you up in the morning? What do you have fun with? What are some of your hobbies?
Well, I ride motorcycles, so that is something that I love to do. And this year, I think I'm going to do some long distance riding this summer.
Awesome. What do you have in mind?
I want to make it my way to Montana. Wow. I want to kind of do that. I don't know, man. Like, I live in Chicago, so it's like I'm really close to like Wisconsin and, you know, kind of like Michigan even, and like just like Upper Peninsula stuff. And I think that there's like, there's got to be some amazing rides. But the thing is like, I also am from California. I don't know why I'm looking back here. I'm also from California. And so I'm so used to the mountains and trees all the time. So I'm always chasing the mountains and the trees. That's what gets me up. So, chasing the mountains and the trees.
I love that. I'm quoting you on that. All right. Yeah. Last question for you is, if you could teach yourself of 10 years ago something about growing in your career that you didn't know then, but you know now, what would it be?
Oh my God, dude, pay attention to algebra. Like, straight up. Like,
so true.
Like, girl, I know you went to art school to avoid math, but you're gonna be real pissed later when you realize that you actually really needed the data analytics. Yeah, you did.
Great. I was a music major, Jess, so there's the
Yeah. We tried to avoid that piece of it.
All right. If somebody wants to get a hold of you, how do they do it?
Yeah, the best way to get a hold of me, you can either go to my website, it's jesservion.com, or find me on LinkedIn, Jess Servion.
All right. Thank you so much, Jess. I really appreciate your being here today.
Thank you so much for having me, Marcus. This was fun.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us on Directly Speaking today. We hope you enjoyed the content. We hope you enjoyed getting to know Jess a little bit with us. And until then, until next time, have a great day, everybody.